This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The world outside your window may not be great right now, but what if we were looking outside the same window? Because that's what's happening here on Everything is Super this week. It's myself, Josh Wigler, joined here as always by Kevin Mahadeo, except it's not like always, because this time we're in person. We're in the same room.
Live and in person here in Josh's apartment.
Oh, my
it's
God.
It's Josh and Kevin.
Oh, my God. Much like the Asgardians taking over Midgard. I guess, technically, everyone in Marvel space.
Yeah, everyone was there. And really, everyone is here in spirit in this apartment as we're throwing a nonstop party since my arrival.
We're having a rager. Kevin, for the first time... Kevin and I are hanging out for the first time right now since we launched Everything is Super, the podcast.
Which is crazy.
And there are people who may not know why that's a big deal, because they just joined us for the podcast at some point in time. Kevin and I go very a ways back. We've known each other well over a decade at this point. We're very tight friends, although we pretend to... We play enemies on a podcast. I used to stay with Kevin every time I would go out to LA for work. Obviously, like, that hasn't happened in a long time. So it was March 2020. It's the week before lockdowns.
And Kevin, literally the week before lockdowns.
I'm in LA. I'm with Kevin. I'm with Kevin's fiance. I'm with Kevin's dog. I'm with the whole family. And we're like, wow, world seems like it's going in a crazy way. Anyway, I'll probably be back out in a couple months. That's my record scratch. Fast forward like a month or so later, a few weeks later, Kevin and I, very sad that we're not going to be seeing each other anytime soon. We're like, let's do a podcast about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Let's just rewatch all the Marvel movies. And thus, Everything is Super is born. So we haven't seen each other since we started this podcast that we've been doing together for almost, for you, consecutively. I think every single episode,
yeah,
Kevin has been on.
I have been unless we take a break on it, like if we take a week off. But
otherwise, you're on every single episode of the podcast.
Yeah, it's been nonstop. It's weird to think about because I remember when we first started, our intent was just like, okay, yeah, let's do it. We'll get to Avengers. We'll see. You know, we'll see how it goes. We'll get to Avengers. Maybe things will change by then
if we like it. People are having fun, and then clearly people were having fun, including very importantly, you and I were having fun.
Yep.
And then like we got through the Infinity Saga. We're like, well, crap, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we went through that. Then the Marvel shows came back, or started rather the MCU shows. Sorry, I'm not trying actively to shade Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or the Netflix stuff, I promise. But the Disney Plus MCU shows began. There was new content. We've had friends along the way. We've had incredible times along the way. We have found ourselves like having these moments where we're able to like stop down and do like a mini series, like on Superman when we did the Christopher Reeve Superman movies, which was so much fun. And now we find ourselves pondering the question. What if we had not done this podcast, Kevin? What if none of this had happened?
that's a dark reality. Yeah. That's a dark, sad
Here's
reality
a what if
we
you.
Never did
what,
this.
What if I had come out to Los Angeles 1 week later? In March 2020.
I've thought about that a bit. Like
you I would have lived with you probably.
Yeah. And honestly,
until you got sick of me, probably would have had to kill me.
It's so easy to just also be like, that would have been great for, I feel like,
it would have been bad,
X amount of time. And then I think it would have been disastrous to both my upcoming marriage and your actual marriage.
Well, here's how we can map it to like get us on relevant topic for this week, because this week is going to be this combination platter of us waxing poetic a little bit. We put out the call, ask us anything. We've got questions from the listeners of Everything is Super, super at postshowrecaps.com. But of course, we also have an episode of Marvel's What If, the animated series that's on Disney Plus right now, to discuss, and the episode is What If Thor Was an Only Child?
Amazing stuff is the answer.
God, I mean, the episode titles are just always going to kill me. What If Thor Was an Only Child? It's just a hilarious name for a half hour plus of television. But like the premise is, what if Odin, when he found Loki all the way back in the day, returned Loki to the Frost Giants, and Thor was raised as an only child? What would have happened then? And extraordinary shenanigans ensue. That's the answer.
The answer is a 1980s John Hughes film, right? Because like
a ridiculous party,
so much like a mix of that era of film of like a teenager throwing a party at home, mom's gonna be on the way. Like there's just so much in there, and we talked about like how this show does different genres and like leaning into like a pretty much full comedy. Beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
What I'm thinking is to map our circumstances onto Thor's. We know what happened if Thor and Loki had stuck together. We know what happened if Thor and Loki were raised together and lived together. It was bleak. One of the brothers came to Earth and tried to conquer it, yeah, and routinely sabotaged his other brother and then died like 500 times and then got lost in some sort of time nebula. Meanwhile, Thor seems to be thriving. So no matter what, Thor seems to be doing okay. Or there's the version...
Emotionally, not so much all the time, but
or,
yeah.
Or there's the version where they were not raised together. They were raised separately, and a massive party ensues. So I think that that's what happened for us, is we did not get locked down together, Kevin. In that world, one of us tries to kill the other, then tries to maybe conquer Los Angeles.
Sounds right. I think we both know which person did both those things.
Yeah, and then you get lost in the time nebula.
Yeah.
Crisis on Infinite Kevins.
Ooh, I love it. I would hate it. I hate it. I can't imagine a reality. I would, oh God, that's so spot on. I would be that Loki,
yeah,
who just was just like fed up with himself as we all start fighting. It would absolutely.
I don't want to meet Alligator Kevin. Alligator Kevin scares the shit out of me.
Gator
in premise.
Kevin exists. He's my college self who went to the University of Florida.
There
so.
You go. Yeah, I repeat, I don't want to meet Gator Kevin.
Nobody wants that.
I met the guy after Gator Kevin, and that guy was ridiculous, and I love that guy, but I don't need to go earlier. Yeah, and then I think you know, we have the version where we just decided to like hit the proverbial Las Vegas and party all over Earth with the Everything is Super podcast. So that is just in brief, just to reset it for people who don't know, that's effectively the origin story.
Yeah, well, Vegas definitely involved. I don't think we've ever been to Vegas together, which
I've just talked about this on a podcast, on the Ted Lasso podcast with Antonio Mazzaro, that I have not been to Vegas as an adult.
Wow.
I went to Vegas as a small child.
We should do Vegas one day.
I don't know that I'm interested, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but nobody's actually interested in Vegas.
So why would we go?
Because it's an experience.
Oh, God. Okay. You know, maybe. I feel like I'm going to regret this later. I feel like safe enough in your hands for a Vegas trip.
I've been to Vegas so many times, but the reason I like going is going with people who have never been to Vegas.
Okay.
So this is exactly the type of setup where I would want to go to Vegas.
I'm not
again.
Going without checking in with Antonio first. So he and I will have to have a conversation and then we'll talk it through. So this is the way it's going to be today. We're going to talk about what if, then we'll answer questions that people ask for us. We will do some shit posting along the way, I am sure. Super at postshowrecaps.com was the way to get feedback in for this podcast and is the way to get feedback in for this podcast moving forward as we're getting into the final 2 weeks of What If.
That's so sad.
Madness. Yeah. I mean, are we still feeling, Kevin, that this is the best Disney Plus show? And by we, I'm like assigning the royal we to you.
Yeah, for me, yes. I mean, there's just, I don't know, man. This is, I love it because it's independent, like self-contained stories. They all feel really interesting and really fun and unique. And like, while not everyone is a home run necessarily, it's not dependent, right? Like one okay episode in this doesn't really negate a lot of the other stuff, where the other things are so serialized that like one bad episode, one boner could really affect
the entire thing.
It's funny because I used the word in the right context.
It was from WandaVision, folks.
So like, there's a lot of stuff there that makes it work for me, and it being the multiverse is obviously like a huge factor for my enjoyment. This is another perfect example. This is why I like the multiverse. You can get a story as ridiculous as this one, and it's fine. It doesn't do anything bad to the rest of the continuity.
This episode is called What If Thor Was an Only Child? But the legendary Brendan Fitzpatrick, who compiles feedback for us on Everything Is Super, had an alternate title, and I will bleep it out. What If Thor Was an F-Boy? Which is like...
That's so accurate to what this was.
It's so accurate. It's so good. It's the first episode of any of these that you and I have watched in the same room together. And it was very early in the morning as we put it on. And we were like just like cracking up the whole way through.
A number of times. Robin was also here, also laughing along with a lot of it.
What if Thor was like Gaston is part of the energy in certain points?
Like, it really is like, what if Thor? The only child bit is just that I really throw stuff off in terms of like, here's just a question I'll ask. But the reality is just like, what if Thor was just a frat boy? What if Thor threw a rager? Like, and the apartment was Earth instead of like his actual house.
Part of it is like, what if the first Thor movie had like Taika energy, right? Like, it kind of has like, what if
the first two really? Because like, I think you said it, that this one movie or 30 minutes is better than both the first.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I feel like this is an uncontroversial take, but maybe I'm wrong. That like, I think that this one 30 minute episode of television was better than the first two Thor movies by, you know, a good stretch.
Not even a contest for me. I think I even
said the context of those movies for sure. But this is just like such a better story set during that time.
It also just does a better job building a relationship between Thor and Jane Foster than the other ones did.
Yeah.
And like, that's crazy that it did that, but it did. I was so into it.
Well, I think like the relationship that they build between them isn't too far away from the relationship that gets built between them in the original Thor movies. I mean, my company line as it pertains to Thor and Jane has long been like, they're in lust. They're not in love. Like, these two people are just like, these mega hot people are mega attracted to each other. And like, I think that the counter argument, not to put words in your mouth, has basically been like, but the movies did like a bad job of like expressing and exploring
it. It did, because the ending of the first Thor movie was this whole thing. It's just like, the love of my life is gone. And it's just like, no, dude. And like, that was a big issue. But in this, they really lean into...
I think like it's so great that like the power of the animated medium can like, I don't know, like there's like an expressiveness even to just like the illustrated versions of these characters that I felt like did not really exist between these two characters in live action, at least as far as we've seen it yet. Now, I'll also say that like watching Thor and Jane in this episode got me really hyped for Thor Love and Thunder, right? And like the possibilities there. And I think even frankly, the fact that Natalie Portman voices Jane Foster in this episode, when we live in a world where like Brie Larson isn't even coming in to voice Captain Marvel, but Natalie Portman, who had this sort of famous falling out with Marvel after Dark World, and we all thought we would never see her again, is coming back for Thor 4 and seems to be like in like decent enough shape with like the Marvel family that she's like, yeah, sure, I'll like record an episode of TV for you. Why not?
Because I think they're doing stuff right. Like, I think your point to the expressiveness of their facial features, obviously animation allows that to an extreme degree. I do think we got a lot of that from Chris Hemsworth in Ragnarok, because Taika was allowing for a lot more expressive comedic story versus the Branagh stuff, which was way more dour, right? Like, Hemsworth is not going to be as animated as he, I think, is capable of being. Certainly, if you follow Natalie Portman and know her from other stuff, she's an expressive person. Like, just watch the SNL skit, right? Like, she is able to pull off, I think, those, like, exaggerated features as needed, especially for a comedy beat. So, I think it rightfully should get us excited about Love and Thunder, because I think in the hands of Taika live action, we could get closer to this that we just watched than either of the first two Thor films where Jane Foster was featured.
Yeah, she just like seems to be like happy to be back in this world. At least, like, I mean, she's an Oscar-winning actress, so like she could put on her performance. But if it's all performance of like the enthusiasm behind it, then like I'm sold. I'm convinced. The like the fabric of fiction is wide open and I'm draped in it and it's great.
I would drape myself in the fabric of fiction.
But it was really, really fun, those two characters. But I think also just getting like a Thor who is in like that full comedy mode, he's for sure the right character to do an episode like this with, because he is like hitting so well right now as a comedic character. He's obviously capable of great dramatic beats. Chris Hemsworth is a terrific actor, but we haven't done the out-and-out comedy episode of What If yet. And this episode being, you say, like, it's a John Hughes movie, like, it feels like Home Alone, I think you were saying, like, in certain
parts.
A bit of
Ferris Bueller. I mean, there's a lot of that genre, right? Like, Adventures in Babysitting, except, like, it's a little more self-contained there.
Well, which is hilarious that they're doing that because of, like, Thor's role in Adventures in Babysitting,
correct,
right? You know,
played by Vincent D'Onofrio, yeah, which always makes me just
AKA
delighted.
The Kingpin. So, like, I feel like, I almost wonder, like, does it start there? Is that, like, the joke, right? Like, it's like, oh, let's do Adventures in Babysitting, except actually with Thor. It's not quite that. It is like sort of like an Animal House, like, yeah, you know, like, kegger, rager type episode. But it is so low stakes, but presented with so much of the fabric of, like, what makes these big action epics action epic-y. Like, the fight around the planet between Thor and Captain
Marvel. Incredible. Especially when they get, like, punched out of the continent and you get to see the written France, you know, as they fly out. It was very DBZ. They end up in the desert fighting, like, Vegeta and Goku, which is basically what we're seeing. We're essentially seeing, like, you know, Saiyan-level people punch each other around, which was really fantastic.
Yeah.
The choreography is really good in these animated fights. I mean, we talked about it before, especially in that first one, but I think here, you know, also really good as, like, he's using his hammer and she's, like, blasting at him. It's really fantastic.
Yeah. It was one of those moments where I was like, so they called Captain Marvel for this, but they didn't call Captain Marvel when the Chitauri came calling, you know? They didn't call Captain Marvel when Loki showed up and did Battle of New York hijinks. Maybe, well, call Captain Marvel there.
Well, I think that's part of this, right? It's the comedic factor. Like, the fact that they're calling Captain Marvel because there's a rager on Earth,
yeah,
is, like, part of the comedy. Like, they wouldn't in the actual circumstances. Like, she was a failsafe. Nick Fury was the one who knew about her, you know? There's levels there in the main MCU I could attribute to this. But the fact that they called her for this is just...
Is there any piece of this that, like, Captain Marvel is coming to Earth to clean up Thor's mess, and, like, Thor has brought everybody from space? Is there any part of you, I was going to ask, that was surprised that Captain Marvel didn't have more ins with the people at the party? That there wasn't more, like, people at the party reacting to, like, space-trotting Carol Danvers?
I mean, certain people knew who she was, right? It depends on the timeline and where this took place, which seems to be earlier on. I mean, she was certainly...
Yeah, it's that same, you know, what was it, a few episodes back, where it was, like, Fury's big week. Like,
yeah.
This was Fury's big week, and Fury got knocked to who knows where by a quote-unquote ball cannoning Korg.
Yes. Hey, I've got to get in there.
Yeah, so good.
That's my terrible New Zealand. That wasn't quite right.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Not bad.
Yeah, we didn't have enough pamphlets.
You did pretty good, Kevin.
Yeah, there's so much in here that I think is really funny, though, right? In the way that they play stuff, to the point where I've talked about this before, that I wasn't a huge fan of Darcy and Kat Dennings in the first two Thor films. I really liked her in WandaVision. I loved her in this because I think that Kat Dennings-ness really translates well, obviously, the comedy and this type of storytelling. And it's just really, really delightful. Like, or she was delightful in this, to the point where they really did the things that I thought were just, like, the dumbest things you could possibly do. Because I remember when Howard showed up, I turned to you and I said, oh man, I hope they hook up. And then I said it out loud.
I was like, gross, man. Are you serious?
And the next scene, they're getting married. And I was just like, perfection. This is what needs to be happening.
You were the Michael Fassbender gift, perfection. Like, it was everything you wanted.
Yeah. I mean, this episode really could not have been less of everything I wanted. Like, they really handled it well, to the point that like the one thing that I was kind of weirded out with was the ending, but everything else was like fine.
Sure. I feel like we probably ought to talk about the ending, because like a lot of what we can say and probably still will say, but like let's rattle off some things like giant frost giant Loki, yes, great character, and like the like sort of like the Lando Han vibe of like meeting on Cloud City when the two of them meet in Vegas for the first time, like
him trying to hold Thor's like a tiny phone, like the tiny phone, and then dropping it just because he's so tall. He's like, oh,
that was pretty good, and that Loki was still Loki, and like he was still like, listen, Thor, I love you, man, but like, your brother from another mother. That's not my mom. So let's go, Ice Boys.
Yep.
It was absolutely hilarious. I hope that we see Frost Giant Loki in season two of Loki.
In some capacity?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that we should. I think it would be really, really fun. So there's that piece of it. There's a few other, just like the Howard the Duck and Darcy gag was great. Darcy generally just really, really great. Love having Darcy back in here. Maria Hill taking on like more of the director role, which is the thing that we get in the comics, but we really haven't gotten in the MCU.
I thought Rumlow was showing up. We never get to use the nuke, stuff like that.
Yeah, because
right?
He's a psychopath, you know, because like, he's a crazy person.
Obviously the ending part where she, you know, it's Frigga on the way to Earth, and it's just like them trying to clean up, putting like when he knocks over Stonehenge to begin with is fantastic. When he strains the Leaning Tower of Pisa like Bizarro Superman in Superman 3, also excellent. But then like showing up and it's like the fake teaching class.
Yes.
Just, oh my God, there's just so much in this that was just so, so good and so entertaining.
It was great. It was really, really funny. I laughed and laughed and laughed. And then the only thing that like I'm left with from like, you know, like calling this, I don't know. It's crazy. Is it crazy to say this is my favorite one? Like, I don't know. I just enjoy.
Entertainment factor. I really don't think it's that crazy. You know? I mean, there's like levels of like what we're trying to do here, right? Like, are we looking for deep, profound storytelling? I mean, if you are looking for that stuff, like, you know, this might not be your favorite. There's certainly other ones. If you're looking for like really like adventurous style ones, you're gonna look to the Star-Lord T'Challa one. I think it's dependent on like what you're going for, but it's just pure, unbridled entertainment that harkens back to, I think, a form of comedy that hits really well, especially for like our age demo.
Yes.
This is the best.
Like, yes.
It really captured so many elements that made me feel nostalgic, but like right for the MCU, like it like for comics, really, not even MCU, let me correct that, like for comics. And What If sometimes did these types of like banana stuff. They used to call them like What The, instead of like What If, because, you know, obviously like What The F. Which is like really what this sort of felt like, but like it done so very well.
Yes.
So like, I don't think you're off base saying this might be your favorite.
I don't
Certainly,
know. I have to sit down with the list. I have to think about it. I've enjoyed every episode.
Yeah.
Single one. There's been like,
there's one that I obviously enjoyed less, but that's me.
But like there has not been like a single episode that I've watched where I haven't felt like, oh my God, this is so much fun. Or like, oh my God, this is like shockingly emotional. Like I've had a response every time.
Yes.
Every single episode. So I'm really pleased with it. But then there's the end of this episode, that we should discuss, that a lot of people, the patrons of Post Show Recaps, you can become one. Patreon.com/Post Show Recaps. Mentioning, like this cliffhanger ending. And for Fitzy says the cliffhanger endings, they're starting to wear a little thin for me, especially when aliens show up to fight everyone at the end of this most recent episode. Tell more of the story when there's more to tell. Don't leave us hanging, bro. So that's from Fitzy. From Ryan. Ryan says, wait, was that Ultron with the Infinity Stones at the end? Why? I feel like they could have ended this one with a happy ending. So I think that there is like a little bit of like that vibe coming out of the episode from certain people of like, it's a two-pronged thing. We got to take it in like two hits. So maybe let's take it like as it pertains to the episode in hit number one. Does a cliffhanger ending, like sort of a, like instead of what if, it's what the, like, does that ending work for you here is question number one. And then I guess we should start getting into the theorizing for the second portion of this question.
Yeah, the ending in terms of like, does it hit and like how it works? It's weird because, like, I really did think they could have ended on a happy note, like a fully happy note. They don't end it on necessarily a, like, negative note. Obviously, there's a lot of questions about what it means. What I found really interesting about it, and this maybe leads in and pertains to the second part of this, is that the Watcher had a reaction of like, wait,
the Watcher
what?
Was shocked.
Yeah, he was surprised by this. So that's really interesting and makes me feel like maybe there's something more here that we'll see as we lead into what is going to be the final two episodes. Again, I said this before, and I still retain it. I really don't want or need this to have an overarching story.
I think it's happening.
Yeah, that's not necessarily what I'm here for. Maybe they'll pull it off this time. Once again, I think the previous series we've seen that tries to do this overarching serialized story hasn't landed incredibly well. It's not a bad landing, but it's a wobbly one. You know, it's flying off the mat at the end, and you kind of stumble forward slightly, and you're like, oh, that was pretty good, but I don't know if you're going to get an Olympic medal for it, but it's pretty good. And this one, you know, with this ending, I don't know. It felt weird, mostly also because it wasn't fully explained. The fact that I think even as we're watching it, we weren't sure, is that Ultron? Like, what's happening there? Is the reason why? I have a theory about what's about to happen.
Okay, well, let's hear it. What are you thinking is going on? And are you thinking that this is Ultron who's showing up at the end of this episode?
I think it might be. And I think it was because the mask comes up, right? And it's a face under there with the Mind Stone on its forehead. And as we know, the person who has the Mind Stone is Vision. And I think it was Robin who said, like, oh, that might be Vision. Maybe this is a situation where they didn't give the Mind Stone to a Vision, a Vision. They gave it to Ultron.
Interesting.
When it was built. And like, maybe that's what happened. So there is that theory there. But I actually think the reason he had a what the reaction, or like a wait what from the Watcher, is that I think that's an Ultron from another timeline they're about to see in the next episode.
Okay, so you think that this isn't, I mean, because let's play that out, right? Like, Ultron gets the Mind Stone, so for whatever reason, like, Ultron, like, how would this happen? I think, like, you can imagine the world where Ultron wakes up, Ultron becomes self-aware, Ultron destroys Vision or incorporates, like, assimilates Vision, but then Ultron doesn't just go balls to the wall, guns blazing, coming around the corner of Avengers Tower and just like, let's fight.
Well, you have an Ultron who I think bides his time, is what it is. I don't think he destroys Vision, because when you look at
or Jarvis, rather, because Vision's not real yet. Yeah,
Jarvis, right? Because when you look at Age of Ultron, he became self-aware, and within moments, he's just like, I'm going to put myself in this body, give myself a mouth, and go after the Avengers.
Man.
What if you
I hope
did
that
it?
Mouth moves in just like
the weirdest ways for
no,
you?
No, I hope that it is very, very like rigid. I want it to be not a fluid looking mouth, please God.
But I think like maybe that's what happened. A possibility. Again, we're conjecturing a lot of stuff based on nothing. But like if this Vision didn't immediately go after the Avengers, bided his time. Tony realizes that he's created an AI. Like, you know, this exists now. He creates a body for it. And he gives it the Mind Stone. He does what he eventually does with Vision to Ultron, because in his mind, watching what's happening, if Ultron didn't immediately turn evil on them, he would make that call, quite possibly. So that's how it could have happened. That's where we end up in the situation. And you have an Ultron there who maybe conquers an entire universe and now has the ability, using the stones, to go to other universes. And so like that's him essentially, an Ultron crossing from one world into the next. Hence why the surprise from the Watcher, because that Ultron, that army doesn't belong here in this universe, because it's from a different one.
So there shouldn't be this level of crossover, and so that's going to catch even Uatu off guard.
Correct.
I mean, the idea of Ultron with these powers, with the Mind Stone imbued in him rather than being used to create Vision, is terrifying when you know what his plan is. It's like to replace life with, you know, his AI, with like his whole thing. So I feel like it's also kind of cool to like map that onto, to like Tony Stark's whole thing in Endgame, right? Like him being the last one with the Infinity Stones and like using them to save the day, like having his creation now be the one who is now coming in to like wreck everything. It's like that there's some symmetry there. He has like the faceplate. There's a face underneath there.
Right.
So what up with that?
That's the weird part, right? Like, that's the question where, like, if Tony built a body and Ultron armor becomes an armor.
Did putting the Mind Stone in Ultron, like, create vision within him? Like, is there something like
Well, there's also a weak spot, right? Like, if that gem is a weak spot on you, which we know from Vision, like, that gets ripped out, you're done, so why not protect it with armor? Why not, like, have a vibranium armor around you to prevent people from grabbing it? There's the other possibility that we could throw out here, that it's not Ultron or Vision, that it's Kang the Conqueror.
I was just going to say we haven't talked about Kang, and, like, Kang is Mr. Multiverse.
Right.
So is that like a Kang with Ultron armor?
It's quite possible, right? Like that's the other
Ultron-ish
possibility.
Armor, yeah.
Do I want that? Not really. I think what could be happening here, right? If you think about,
I think I kind of like that.
I guess I just
that there's so many Kangs. Why not just give us another Kang?
Well, it's not that they give us another Kang. This is going into the whole crossover thing because like we could be leading into the final two episodes being a Crisis on Infinite Earths type situation.
Crisis on Infinite Kevins.
Which, as we know, is terrible. Mm-hmm. We don't want that. We don't want all those Kevins together. Uh-huh. That's like a Rick-level problem that,
it would
that
be bad.
Shouldn't exist. So if that's the case, you could have this crossover in the final two episodes where maybe the first part is explaining how this person, be it Kang or Ultron, got all these stones. And is now going to go across the multiverse to start conquering stuff. And the final episode is the big battle. And you can then pull in your Agent Carters, right? Or Captain Carters. You can pull in whatever the new team of Avengers that Fury is going to form after his really bad week. You know, like all the stuff that we've seen, you can have Star-Lord T'Challa show up. And you have this like giant unification of all these characters we're introduced to. Maybe some even new ones fighting against these army of Ultron stuff. It's this big battle, yada, yada, yada. It's endgame proportion, basically, right? Like,
right.
It's the on your left moment of bringing in all these other characters. I really don't want that specifically this early because, like, this is where you lose people when it comes to the multiverse. It happens time and time and time again at DC Comics especially, which is, like, the home of the multiverse. And it's happened at Marvel recently. Is when you do the crossovers, when you do these big epic things of bringing in all these people from these other realities, it gets confusing and it gets a little bit overloaded where you're like, oh, there's so many Captain Americas. Which one's that one? What's happening here? Also, personally, it ruins the realities they're from because when you do these big battles and these big crossovers, usually people die, especially in comics. And so you have this cool character you're introduced to and then they die in this big battle, but then that universe continues and you're just like, well, the universe kind of sucks now because like now they
gone,
have to, right, you have
gone.
To do with this repercussion now. Of like this universe, which used to be its own story, now has to be affected by this some other BS. So like that's part of the reason why like giant multiversal crossovers are problematic. But it's always the end game, no pun intended, of these types of stories. And I'm just really hoping they don't do that yet. Like if you want to do it, save it for season two or something. I just think it's too soon to do something like that.
It seems like they're doing it, and so I would expect that next week's episode is going to be whatever backstory is necessary to like set up who or what this character that's stepping in through at the end of the episode is. And then episode 9, the finale, will be some sort of coming together to fight that guy.
Right. Which, again, all right.
You know, whether or not you want it. Well, look, then if what happened was we got 7 what-if episodes that were like in like supreme isolation, and then we have the crossover for the last two, then like 7 out of 9, 7 of 9, Jerry Ryan style, like 7 of 9 episodes.
I mean, that's almost appropriate if Ultron's going to be very Borg-like, right? In terms of like assimilating
people.
No,
we're all unique and interesting. So like I'm so hooked into what they've been doing that like I'm interested to see what they're going to try. I don't think that everything has been 100% hit rate, but I think like a lot of it has been really, really, really super solid. Like just like really solid across the board that I'm interested. But I do think... having the cliffhanger happen here in this one, I don't know how I feel about that. Like, I feel like I don't love it tonally when like this whole episode is Animal House and then it ends with like sort of like this Stephen King-ish twist. Like, it's a little bit tonally jarring, and I think that's what they were going for. For me, it doesn't like massively work, but it also doesn't like take me out of the episode so bad. It might be like enough that like if I'm just because there's so many episodes here that are so great. And I'm trying to like figure out how to order them. It may be like enough of like a glaring thing that it would prevent it from being in like my top spot.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. But
you know, so it is what it is. Anything else from this episode that you really wanted to get into? Like things just cracked you up. Howard the Duck. Seth Howard Green Duck is Howard sure. the Duck.
Yes.
They got to probably just make a Seth Green Howard the Duck movie, no?
I mean, there. I feel like at least an episode or something centric to it. Like
Howard the
have
Duck
a Disney Plus special that's just Howard the Duck.
They got to do stuff with Howard the Duck. Like Howard the Duck in this context was amazingly fun. And like he's right there, guys. Like just do more Howard the Duck stuff.
There's a comic book artist. I believe it's Lynelle Yu, who's a phenomenal artist. Let's just start there. Like incredible, who has done stuff with Bendis a lot, and whenever Bendis asks him to draw a spread, he constantly sneaks Howard the Duck into the spread because it's usually of like, you know, a spread of a ton of characters, and so he'll always just like sneak Howard the Duck in, and Bendis has talked about like getting the pages back and just be like, god damn it, like just finding Howard the Duck hidden in the background of one of these giant, like, you know, massive Endgame style shots.
Yeah. I really loved him. I thought that the Grandmaster.
Oh my God, the Grandmaster DJing showing up, the party. DJing everything. There was actually Jeff Goldblum.
What is he? He's like, release the foam.
Release the foam.
And then the foam party starts.
Like, that's really great. All the cameos. Karen Gillan actually just voicing Nebula for like one moment. Of
what
just
did
like,
she say? She's like, Mama needs a new eye.
Yeah, Mama needs a new eye. And then later on, where she's like, I think I hear my dad calling me. Yeah. Like, just yeah. like that type of stuff is what really, really makes it.
The whole like final push
Drax
of like
vomiting on him.
Of like, Frigga is coming to Earth. And like Thor has to clean the party, and like Carol's final line of like, I'd start with the corners, work your way out.
It's a sphere.
was super, super, super funny. Like all of that energy was just absolutely hilarious.
When he goes up and his voice gets booming and he's just like, listen to me, my mom is coming. Yeah,
my mother is coming. And the music underneath it, like they're playing it as an epic moment, was unbelievably great. Like one of my only regrets was that like this was not like a live action short. Like it would have been really, really fun to like see all of these actors doing this stuff. But I think What If and the voice acting is like totally channeling the vibe close enough that like I'm fully good to like
also
count it in.
Really like that right before the Ultrons or whatever show up. You had that moment of him like bringing Jane the flowers and being like, ask me out on a real date, man. And I just love that. Like
he knows the planet where yeah. everybody's a unicorn, including the waiters.
Oh, it's so good.
I hope we get to see that someday.
Yeah, I hope that's in the next Thor movie.
What if that's a Love and Thunder tease?
I hope so. I hope that that's where, you know, they go on a date. I hope that's where, like, possibly Jane Foster and Valkyrie go. It'd be incredible.
That'd be tremendous. All right, Kevin, we've got a bunch of AUAs. Ask us anything. We got a bunch of questions.
AUAs.
Got a bunch of questions that have been asked to us by the listeners of everything. Is super. Are you excited? Are you nervous? Like, how are you
nervous?
Feeling?
Probably. I mean,
no, there's nothing too invasive.
Sure, there's nothing crazy.
Nothing too invasive. Everybody's keeping it really cool. We'll start with the easy one. Mike Edwards asking, "How's it feel to be back together, best friends?"
First of all, I'm Josh's best friend. He's not mine. So
not accurate. It's definitely not accurate.
No, I mean, like it's great. It's weird. It's awesome. Not weird because, like, it's weird because of the circumstances, right? It's weird that this is how we're reuniting after so long. Just the circumstance of COVID existing. But it's exciting. Like, we spent a lot of last night, us and our, you know, wife/fiancés, like, just chatting up for, like,
oh,
hours.
Oh, yeah, for, like, 7 hours. It's great.
It was incredible. So, like, we had a really good time with it. So,
yeah,
for me,
I've kind of
amazing.
Run out of things to talk to you about. It's like, you can go now.
It's
like,
a good thing I'm leaving relatively soon.
This is great, but you can go. All right, so that was, like, well, there's other personal questions. You want a sappy one?
Oh.
But this one was nice. This is from Felipe. Felipe writes, what's the greatest thing you've learned from each other, personally or professionally?
I don't know, Josh.
Why don't you start?
No, you start.
The greatest thing I've learned from Kevin. The greatest thing I've learned from Kevin is probably that small dogs are cool, or can be, because I've hung out with Kevin's small dog so many times, and I miss Gus very, very much. I would say that's probably the greatest thing that I've learned from you, because that was a gift. I was not a small dog fan.
Yeah. I mean, Gus is incredible.
I would say that's probably top of the line.
Well, the greatest thing you'll ever learn, Josh, is just to love and be loved in return. So
I suppose that's true.
I don't know. Like,
I taught you that. That's the greatest thing you've ever learned.
There's certainly that is what you've wanted for me for so long. So I think me having that now in my life is partially responsible.
I feel like I was an influence.
Yeah.
I feel like
you've certainly helped tear my stone heart, you know, open so like you can find the like red beating center in there.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Searching for the perfect gift idea for that hard-to-buy person on your list? The Allbirds Wool Runner is a natural fit. The Wool Runner is super cozy, super comfy, and super giftable. It's made with ZQ-certified merino wool, a naturally cozy material that offers next-level comfort and a lower environmental impact. The cushioned midsole and versatile design offer all-day comfort in a classic style you can wear every day, even in a winter wonderland. And its fully machine washable construction makes it easy to keep your shoes looking like new. Allbirds shows off the Wool Runner's carbon footprint right on the shoe so you can see the difference for yourself. On top of that, they actually offset that carbon footprint to zero, making the Wool Runner completely carbon neutral, so you can stay cozy and tread lighter on the planet. This holiday season, give tidings for comfort and coziness with the Allbirds Wool Runner. Discover your perfect pair at Allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.
Kevin, you have taught me that being clear in your view is a very important thing. I feel like that is like my kind way of saying you're very opinionated. and that like there is war to be felt and fought in that way of like approaching life, of like such a clarity of vision of like how you see things. But there is also peace in that too. I strive for that. You're not wishy-washy. I can be very wishy-washy. You know how you feel, and you're not afraid to say it.
That's true. I think there's also elements of just like being or learning to be good with yourself, I think, and like therapy and stuff that you've helped in terms of like me understanding things, which has been great.
Yeah.
So like there's some sad.
The other thing is you taught me the Macarena. I hadn't learned it until you and I became friends. Now I'm pretty good at the Macarena.
It's a hell of a dance. I had to teach you white boy something.
You really did. Kevin taught me how to dance, or Kevin would like to have been able to teach me how to dance. I don't think anyone can. Sadly, Swayze's gone. He may have been the only one who could have done it. All right, so let's get into some superhero-y stuff. Zach Brooks, the great Zach Brooks, writes in, says, I'm really getting burnt out on movie trailers. They always show way too much, and specifically shots from the third act. I'm looking at you, X-Men Apocalypse trailer, which literally showed the final shot of the movie in the trailer.
Yep.
It feels like so much content is focused on dissecting every trailer for clues instead of talking about the content itself. Is there any way to come back from this? Should we institute a rule that says no shots from anything after the first hour of the movie? Or will I forever be looking away from the screen while the trailers play before a movie? And just to be clear, I do appreciate the way Josh and Kevin did the Spider-Man trailer. That was at least a creative way to do it, and it was fun. Yeah, I enjoyed that as well.
Yeah.
So I do think that like audio commentary over trailers may be a thing we do again. But that being said, I also don't disagree with Zach at all that clearly these trailers are like showing so much stuff. And the Kevin Mahadeo rule, school of thought is don't watch them at all.
Yep. And I kind of stick by that because I agree. Trailers have gotten really tricky, and especially working in the field.
Was this always the way?
No,
because didn't trailers used to be awesome? Weren't trailers like the thing that you'd be like super excited to watch, and like it would be teasy? And I'm not even just talking about like teaser trailers. I'm talking about like outright trailers, which is like get you like hyped without like giving you absolutely everything. I'm looking at, like, the Matrix marketing.
Yeah.
The Matrix marketing, like, really held everything so close to the vest.
Yeah, and but that's become trickier to do. You can't do that anymore. You can't do...
Why not?
...the teasing, because, like, you need to... It's guaranteed... You got to get the guaranteed money, because, like, you need people to come into the theater to watch it, and people are reluctant to be spending as much money because of inflation and how prices have gone up.
Yeah.
It's really changed a lot, and trailers have changed over the last few years, for sure. We entered a weird spot where... You also have, because, like, who makes the movie and who markets the movie, as I can tell you as one who does the latter,
yes,
is different. And usually it's a show of how much, like, faith the studio has is dependent on, like, what's in the trailer. You have weird circumstances where it can work really well. Mad Max Fury Road sort of changed the trailer game because of its use of music. Was so big and, like, used music to create a vibe and a mood in the visuals of it, which is what drove that film. And you have a lot of stuff where if you compare blockbuster movie trailers to independent film trailers, they're completely different.
Yeah.
Blockbuster movies are the ones where they're going to give you plot because they spent so much money on it. They really want you to hook in. The X-Men one's a good call out. The reason they showed that in Apocalypse was very much clearly because they knew feedback was that people wanted to see them in costumes. Unfortunately, that wasn't in the movie. So you have that final shot, which is the only time you have them in costumes that got people excited. Use it in the trailer. It also misleads the audience, so you end up in a bad situation. That's just bad all around, but I have a lot of problems with how Fox approached a lot of that stuff.
Sure.
But then you have other circumstances where, look at Avengers Endgame. That was the genius. I agree, if you want to do a rule, it should be the only first hour rule, right? Like, I think that's smart, but unfortunately, again, with studios and blockbusters, they're not going to have that. Endgame was genius. Endgame only showed you stuff from essentially the first, like, 15 minutes.
They showed you bits and pieces of, like, the time travel, like, getting prepared for the heist.
But you didn't know that's what you're looking at, right?
Like, you, like, kind of maybe suspected, but, like, you certainly didn't know that they were going to cut off Thanos' head in the first 15 minutes.
No, and they only showed, like... they obviously didn't show you Professor Hulk. They made sure to edit out things. And, like, some people are like, that's misleading. But I was like, but that was well done because it was also preparing for something. And I think it worked really well in their favor. But I was watching, I don't even remember the name of it now, but I was watching Shang-Chi. There was, like, or Candyman. It was Candyman. There was a trailer for, like, a bigger movie. And it was very straightforward, very easy to be like, this is what it is. They show you a ton of stuff. And then there was a trailer for an independent movie that was just all vibes, colors, and music. And, like, you're watching it, and it's like, I have no effing clue what this movie is about.
Sure.
But it's for, like, certain people who like those types of independent movies. They're not going to watch that movie for, like, the real plot. It's all about, like, the vibes and the feeling. That's what a lot of indie films are about. And I think, like, when you create the trailers to showcase the vibe and the feeling, that's what they're trying to do. So I think it's just different purposes and different audiences. This is a long-winded way to say, like, I agree about trailers, and that's why I don't generally watch them.
I get it. I do. And I think that, like, they may be broken to a degree. And then, like, to Zach's point about, like, it feels like so much content is focused on dissecting every trailer for clues. Like, supremely candidly, like, this is a big piece of why... I'm not particularly sad to not be in entertainment journalism anymore right now, at least if this is not a forever, at least a for now, like, because a lot of it is that very clicky type stuff right now. And I get it, because you got to drive business. And for whatever reason, this is what people are clicking on. And this seems to be what people want.
As hopefully they say, the spice must flow, Josh. And unfortunately, we all have to bend to the womb of nonsense.
We're doing it differently is certainly my hope. And a lot of this is, like, more conversational than, like, doing, like, let's stop down. Let's focus on every single thing other than Daredevil's arms, which I do think
the
is an important
example
thing
of something that is
to
driving me
on,
that would drive me insane.
And did, look at.
But,
like, that
insane.
Is the kind of thing is, like, then you go on, like, every entertainment website and you're like, this one clue from the Spider-Man No Way Home trailer reveals a shocking return or something like that.
This hard to miss detail changes everything about the MCU.
Look, what? Man, I'm not trying to, like, wash away any, like, I'm, like, guilty of this stuff. Like, I've presided over this. I have participated in this. Like, I'm not trying to absolve myself, but, like, that is the machine. The spice must flow. You were totally
very,
right.
I think I'm very open about the fact that I absolutely left entertainment journalism because I could not do that anymore. I couldn't do when clickbaity headlines started and I was asked to write a very specific one for a very specific site. And I was like, it broke me. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. and I had shifted professions. It's been great, honestly. And so
good for you.
I can't with that sort of stuff. It's very,
you know, podcasting is like in like what we're doing is like adjacent to that. But I feel like there is just like a lot more like conversational vibe to it that makes me feel like this is just the stuff we would be talking about if the mics were off. This is the stuff that we talk about when the mics are off.
Yeah.
So like this is like it's fun. So the format is good. I don't know how we get around like the clickiness stuff. The internet, it is a beautiful place and it is a terrifying place, and a terrible place at the same time. This one, we talked about X-Men Apocalypse. It's a good, segue into this from Josiah. Congratulations, Josiah, by the way, new dad, Josiah,
congrats
to the whole fam. We're wishing you all the best and, just congratulations expanding the Bite Bizards by one. So from Josiah says, dream casting for the MCU's version of X-Men characters and actors.
Oh gosh,
actors is tough and hard to do on the fly. If we're able to like nail one, that would be great. I've already said Roy Kent, Brett Goldstein, Emmy Award winning Brett Goldstein as Wolverine is something I really really want. But how about let's start with characters, for X-Men. What's the lineup that you want to see when we are finally rolling out mutants in the MCU? Give me like, I don't know. Do you want to do like a team of six, seven?
Six is probably good. I think seven might be pushing it.
Is like Professor X just a gimme?
Professor X is a gimme. I think we need Professor X. I think, depending on the story you want to tell, you need Magneto. But again, you've used him in every movie. It becomes so difficult.
They didn't, they did Vulture, they did Mysterio.
Exactly.
Like, so Spider-Man wasn't like dipping right back into Green Goblin and Dr. Octopus. And now they are, and they're using like the original incarnations.
I mean, honestly, if you're going to go for X-Men, you should do William Stryker again, except, find the right way to use him. I think using him as part of the government and military was very smart in X2, in the original comic, God Loves, Man Kills, he was a preacher. And I think that could be a very interesting route, to like tackle some very, very, I think, poignant topics. So like bad guy is I think more of an open discussion, but I think Stryker could be a really interesting one. Just go back to the old, or, you know, make it more like, you know, Friends of Humanity, right? Where it is not necessarily a person, but like an organization that is racist.
Yeah.
I guess
I'm lightly disgusted with you right now for not finally saying, like, this is the chance to do Mr. Sinister. What are y'all doing?
I mean,
why are we not going Mr. Sinister?
It's true. Then you, it depends on what they want to approach it, right? I think if they want to tell
the Summers Brothers, I must have the Summers Brothers.
Well, you have Sinister and you could do a really interesting story about like geneticism, right? And
Mr.
Like,
Sinister is basically like the aesthetic of Dracula meets like a crazy geneticist, right? Like that is effectively his thing.
He has, like,
he's also like invulnerable,
face,
except his only weakness is like Cyclops's optic blast.
Well, they can injure him, and other stuff is that he's able to manipulate his body and molecules to like reshape himself.
He's a mutant
stuff,
though, right?
So it's really wonky because depending on what you follow, I think at one point it's that he had potential to be a mutant and Apocalypse experimented on him and gave him like these powers and the thing we see. So he's not, as far as I remember, he's not a full out actual mutant. That Apocalypse helped create him based on his own genetics, because Apocalypse's mutant abilities, they control all his molecules.
I'm ready for Mr. Sinister is all I'm saying.
Like, we almost got it, because if you watch New Mutants and stuff, they had references to they had the Essex Corporation, because his name is Nathaniel Essex.
I think that the villain is there a gigantic in the Marvel universe, in the X-Men side of things, is there a gigantic fox that they could fight? Does that exist?
Is this something to do with Emily? What's happening here?
No, with 20th Century Fox.
Oh, I see. Like a metaphor.
Hijacking the X-Men for so long. Yikes.
Okay, actual X-Men,
though,
right?
They could fight my wife, but then the X-Men will lose.
They'd lose badly.
Yeah.
I mean, Cyclops, I think 100%. Get some Cyclops, get some Storm. I would love some Nightcrawler, Jean Grey. Man, boy, do I like... Colossus would be really fun. And Kitty Pryde, I think, would be cool. But it's hard to do Kitty without Wolverine. I don't personally want Wolverine in the first iteration.
I want Wolverine, but I want him separate. Like, I want to start with Wolverine, like, on his own. Give me the Wolverine show. Give me the Wolverine movie is fine.
But like, I want that, like, after the first X-Men movie. I don't want Wolverine to be the one coming out the gate, whether on his own or, you know.
I want Wolverine as the post-credit scene in She-Hulk. That's what I want. Have Wolverine show up in a Hulk property as he did in the comics. Have him enter the MCU that way. That's what I want from Wolverine. Surprise us with who is playing Wolverine. And or even if it's just like someone at a bar and then like some like heavily harried, muscled arms just pop claws. You know, like give me that and I am down.
Have we talked about way back in the day? This might have been part of one of the podcasts we did 100 years ago. But I remember, was it, I think it was way, way before Infinity War and Endgame was coming out. And I was just like, man, what if they set up Secret Invasion? What if they do a Skrulls thing, right? And I remember being like, what a way to introduce the X-Men at that time. Because like the Fox deal, I think, had just closed or something. And it would have been amazing if like the post-credit scene in Infinity War, like the, you know, the people got taken out, the Skrulls are have invaded or something. And you just see like this this like mansion slash house and like the Skrull storming in, and you just see like from the back like a guy in cowboy jeans and a flannel shirt like standing there, and as the Skrulls are like storming in, you just see him like put his hand out and claws pop, and it's just like that's the credits, you know, post credits. It'd be like that's how you introduce the X-Men, is like all the other Avengers got taken out and then the X-Men come in, and it would have been, that's a cool way to use Wolverine. Again, I he's overused for me on so many levels.
Obviously, he's a very popular character, and I don't think that they can do X-Men without, maybe they could do X-Men first without Wolverine, but they can't go that far without bringing in Wolverine. Like, eventually, like Wolverine will have to come sooner than later. Wolverine is coming before 2025 is my, I don't know if that's a bold prediction, but Marvel has a very busy dance card through that year. So where does he show up? Where do any of these characters show up? Remains anyone's guess. I guess for me, really quickly, like I think I would be down with like some permutation of the 90s cartoon X-Men roster.
Yeah.
I just love those guys. Those are great.
I mean, those are the things that I think hooked me in as well, right? It would be cool, actually.
Those are the action figures that, did you see on the shelf in the guest room that you're sleeping in right now? I've got all of, like, yes. The 90s X-Men action figures in,
did
like,
I
the same
that,
spot.
Did I see that, Josh? Are you kidding?
No, I know, but, like, there's one cubby that has the
one in the far left, yeah. The second row down. Cyclops in the brown leather jacket.
Cyclops has the brown leather jacket. Jean Grey is there. Mm-hmm. Rogue, Beast is there. Storm, Beast, Gambit. And then I have Jubilee standing at the top with her arms spread like the fireworks when it says, and Jubilee in the casting.
I do think what I just did too is that I listed off the giant size X-Men basically.
Giant size X-Men,
which
great.
Does yeah. include yeah. Wolverine in there. That would be an interesting way of doing the first X-Men movie, is that the original X-Men gets captured and I just do the giant size X-Men story.
Could be fun. How great are my action figures, by the way?
Oh, they're incredible. Yeah. They're incredible. You guys can't see this, but
I've gone
Josh
deep.
Has a lot of action figures, but he has a full storyline built yes. out. It's really incredible.
I created a Marvel Cinematic Universe tableau. It's like a multiversal battle really towards the, Thanos yeah. and Ultron is there. No Infinity Stones in him. It's a whole to-do. I'm, like, lightly embarrassed by it, but also very
it's
proud.
Incredible. My favorite is the Spider-Verse.
This is how
I think
I coped
it's really great.
When I had no friends to see over 2 years,
I brought tons
of action figures into my home, and God bless Emily for letting it go. But I think the days are coming when we're going to have to take it all down pretty soon. Okay, so there is that. This is from Sean. Sean says, what would your dream MCU movie or event be? As in, what's a Marvel property you'd love to see done really, really well? I guess I'll start and say that while we're on the subject of X-Men, what I would really, really love to see is X-Men be successful enough, popular enough, and bold enough to
do
be weird
Age
enough.
Of Apocalypse?
No. Okay. Age of Apocalypse would be cool, but be bold enough to be weird enough to do like deep, Shi'ar Empire type
Ooh,
stuff.
Like actually go full Real Phoenix story.
Yeah.
Not like, even Dark Phoenix, just the OG original.
Here's the thing. So like the X-Men movies have now tried to do Jean Grey as the Phoenix. They've done that storyline twice and they have failed miserably both times. And so like, is it radioactive? Is it too hot? You know what? Put them down, Kevin Feige. Just like put it all out there on the table and
I mean, show them how it's done, right?
Do the Phoenix Saga. Give us the Hellfire Club and all of their cartoony, like, 1800s-ish villainy glory. You know, like, give us that. Give us Lilandra, right, is her name?
Yep.
Give us what's is it Blackbird is her sister or Deathbird is her sister?
Deathbird is her sister.
You know, give us Gladiator.
Black Tom Cassidy is involved in some capacity.
Give us like these crazy X-Men characters and do a space opera. And I think that you could really do this, especially episodically. Like, give us like live action, like TV version of like what the 90s cartoons did so well. They adapted that story really, really well.
For the record, when we do Gladiator, we want him with the giant purple mohawk.
He needs
correct?
The mohawk.
Perfect.
Like, you know, like Drax is shook when Gladiator shows up. Like, we think that we've seen everything that there is to see in the cosmos, and clearly we haven't in the Marvel
close.
Side of
Not
things.
Even close.
But I think that like the X-Men specific cosmic stuff is really, really good. You get like Corsair in there. You get like the Star Jammers. This is like gobbledygook for people who just watch the MCU stuff. But like, this is the stuff that I really, really want to see. I was an X-Men kid.
Yeah.
The 90s X-Men cartoon was like my Marvel stuff long before I cared at all about Captain America or Iron Man. So that's what I want really, I mean, really super badly.
We're on a similar page here. I think it is no secret. I am the same way when it comes to like X-Men is my thing. It is what got me into the Marvel Universe. It is one of the things, big things that got me into comics. While I loved Superman, a lot of that came from obviously like Chris Reeve stuff. But I love the X-Men. So what do I want them to see do right is the X-Men. Again, I've said this before. I really want it to be really delving into the minority experience. You know, again, like that's where you should take your casting and like really cast people of color in those roles. As I've said, make Magneto Professor X black, please. There's just a lot there that I think can work really well and tell an amazing story. Whereas like adaptation, obviously when it comes to the X-Men stuff, I think that'd be really cool. But going on a broader scale, Annihilation could be real goddamn interesting. If they did something like really cosmic, really crazy, but Annihilation, I think that could be really fun. So like that was where I might lean. And with the Fantastic Four coming in, that's where they could go. I agree. I think we're both leaning cosmic though, right? Like between Shi'ar and then the like Annihilation.
This is like one of the issues though of like doing like Thanos and then going multiverse is like we will have no direction to go, but like
bigger.
Although I guess I'll say, this was from Seth. Seth said, who's one actor or actress you'd like to see make their debut in the MCU and in what role? And I think
God, who's left?
Well, that leverages us into this, which is like in this, like if you take Seth's question alongside Sean's, like another thing that I would really want to see in addition to Galactus, which we've talked about a ton. And that was what I was going to say is like, we've done Thanos, we're doing multiverse. Like, how do you like, you're going to have to give us Galactus. And then how are you ever going to top that?
Yeah.
Is a really big question. And I'm curious to see like how they handle that. They're going to handle it someday. I feel pretty confident that they're going to at least try. But what I really want to see them do well, and like they need to do it exceedingly well, is not just the Fantastic Four, but Doctor Doom specifically, who was Stan Lee's favorite villain, right? I think he had said many times over the years that like that was his character.
I believe that is accurate.
Like, show us Latveria, show us Victor Von Doom.
Done right at that.
Don't do no disrespect, I believe Julian McMahon is the actor who played
that
him.
That is correct, from Nip Tuck.
From Nip Tuck. But like, I don't know who you get. Like,
how dare you ignore something with a K? What is his name? That was in the new Fantastic Four movie.
Oh, God. Toby Kebbell, who's a great actor, but no, don't do that. Just do it. Just give us Christoph Waltz. You know, just like,
I mean,
go for it.
Jeez, Christoph Waltz. Well, you got to really, you know, just go for really it. Just age bring, up Reed,
just,
though.
Just bring Christoph Waltz in as Dr. Doom would be hilarious. I feel like it would be good. But that feels like almost like to like fancast.com to like have him. Like, maybe this is like just like a cast, like cast somebody who is just like an excellent theater actor who's just going to show in and just like annihilate the role, like do a Hemsworth and Hiddleston and blow up somebody's spot and make them a star. But Dr. Doom is one of those characters who I think has the potential to be like a really great, like franchise wide villain that they could they could be doing a lot of damage with to like build us up to Galactus by the time we are 70 years old.
It's so crazy because like I can't think of an actor even that is like there obviously is a ton who have not been into the MCU, but like that I'm like clamoring for anymore. I feel like there are people that have been wasted in a way, which as you mentioned, like Idris Elba is a big one, though now he's into DC stuff and I think he's going to thrive there. And even character wise, there's so few for Marvel. That's incorrect. There's a ton of Marvel characters that still exist, but it's also being, I think, saturated with a lot of like other stuff at this point now too, like we're going to head towards. It's so weird. I'm so much more inclined to be like, the DC stuff is where I'm like, my potential still exists, right? Like part of me is just like, give me a weird ass Booster Gold series, right? Like give me like that type of weird stuff. Like that's what I would love to exist in DC. And if DC can't do it, I don't know who the equivalent is in the Marvel universe, but like, give me that. Give me a Booster Gold type character in Marvel, but not like old school Booster Gold. I mean like the current like Quantum Leapy, you know, sliders traveling dude, like that's what I want, with his flying robot skeets, like would be A+.
Yeah. Do you feel like we don't talk enough about DC stuff, and is it our fault or is it somebody else's fault?
It's our fault for not choosing it, but it's somebody else's fault for not making appealing stuff that we want to choose necessarily. Yeah. There is stuff now, I will say that it's changed in my opinion, where there are enough movies, like we talked about Wonder Woman, but I've talked about like Aquaman would be great to talk about because I actually like Aquaman. I love Shazam. You know, like Birds of Prey is incredible. The first Suicide Squad has been opportunity, right? What was that?
Some of this has been opportunity where it's
opportunity
like,
as well. Like when
the timing hasn't
the
worked out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I would enjoy doing more DC stuff. It's just finding the right mindset to not just essentially get on a podcast and have like an amazing Spider-Man 2 experience where we're just like, this sucks. This movie is so stupid. Yeah. And like, if we can find a way to have fun with it, cool. But if it's just like, this movie is too dumb for words.
The TV side of the DC universe, like I'm not really like the CW stuff got way too crossovery for me. And like, maybe that's a weird thing to say considering like the everything is connected man vibe of the MCU. But like in terms of like sheer volume of episodes,
it's volume of episodes.
I really liked Arrow for many seasons.
It's been on too long.
And I enjoyed The Flash for a couple of seasons. Arrow is gone.
Yes. But they've all been on at this point, I think a little too long. I mean,
some of them are
this,
going, like Supergirl is ending.
Supergirl's ending.
I think Flash has not announced an end
date. Flash is not ending. Arrow has ended. Legends, I think, is ending, I think.
I don't know that that's true. I don't know.
The one that I know that you had watched a little bit of that I will
Superman and
throw
Lois.
Myself to like proponent of is Superman and Lois.
Very
it is
good.
Not like the scene. And here's the thing.
It will be though. Eventually it's gonna get very crossovery. There's just no way around it.
I don't know if that's the case. So here's the thing. I think a few things. One, I agree with you. I love that DC stuff, but the DC TV is becoming like the comics where it's just too much and too dense to really delve into. But the Superman and Lois show has been so separate on its own, and with Arrow ending and with Supergirl ending, I think it can possibly stand on its own and not crossover, which I think is kind of amazing and spectacular, and I'm all for it. I think that's really good. I actually really like Stargirl because Stargirl is 100% on its own because it takes place on another Earth. But it's great. I really enjoy Stargirl. Those are the two on the TV stuff I would say to check out because they're still Superman is.
Is Batwoman any good? Do you watch it at all?
I've heard Batwoman is pretty good, but it I haven't watched a lot of it because
I know they had like the huge creative change up that they had to recast. They had to do
they
all
had to
that.
Recast Ruby Rose. I think my reason for not wanting to delve into Batwoman is also just my tiredness of Batman content.
Sure.
So there's that. And so like that's part of the reason. But I heard that's good. I heard Black Lightning's really good and I never got to catch up on that. But now we're at a volume territory as well. The Superman Lois is only 15 episodes. Stargirl is only 13 episodes per season and they're doing season 2 right now and they're like halfway through. So like those also feel like easily digestible. I would actually recommend those for people like Superman and Lois and Stargirl for sure. These to check out because you don't need a lot of context around them.
Interesting. You may be happy to hear this. I have not tried Titans, the live action Titans, but I have finally fired up the very first episode of Doom Patrol, and amazing. I thought it was awesome.
It's wild, right?
Yes.
Doom Patrol is another very, very strange one. There's a, yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, because like Doom Patrol is strange, exists on its own. I think that's for the better. The Harley Quinn animated series is phenomenal. Yeah. Exists on its own. So there's some DC content out there. And actually, DC movies, if you want my recommendation there, and this partially came thanks to Riley. I will call out Riley and Todd. The DC animated universe has launched a new universe called the Tomorrowverse, which is incredible. Like, the level of the old school Bruce Timm stuff, that good. And there's only been a few movies so far. They did Superman, Man of Tomorrow, I think it's called, Justice Society World War II, and then they recently did a two-parter, Batman The Long Halloween. And even though I just said I was like tired of Batman, those were really, really goddamn good. So those are like some recommendations for DC stuff, I guess, to throw out there.
As we're starting to wrap up, a couple more questions here. This is from Dave. Dave asked, there's been lots of speculation about the possibilities of the multiverse. What don't you want to happen?
I think I already said what I really didn't want to happen and seems to be the case that is going to happen.
Crossover on What If, yeah. is Kevin's answer.
Or eventually a crossover coming way too soon, even the broader spectrum.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. All right, and then we've got this last one comes our way from Tessa. Tessa says, on a scale of one to obliterating someone's head with a car door, how upset would you be if they recast Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin in the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Oh, man. What's your thought here, Josh?
Vincent D'Onofrio will be ready tomorrow to play the Kingpin if he's asked. Why bother recasting someone who was so great as the character? If you want to pretend like the Netflix stuff didn't happen, I think that we can adjust. Some people will be disappointed by that. Few people, I think, will be grossly confused by it. Charlie Cox and his arms are right there. Vincent D'Onofrio is right there. Like, bring these people back. It wasn't their fault. They were great. Kristen Ritter, she's ready to go. She gave an interview recently. She's like, I got the jacket. I'm ready to do it. Mike Coulter has another TV job, but he can do two things at once. People can walk and chew gum. In Hollywood, like, you aren't just on a show and then you aren't allowed to do anything else anymore. Bring back Luke Cage. Leave Finn Jones at home. He does not have to come along for the ride. Danny Rand, so sorry. Your time has come. Bring back John Bernthal as Punisher. Do like a superhero version of that. Like, I think that could be fun. I would be thrilled to see the Netflix people back. I really would. I think it would be great. I think that they're all right there. They're great characters, or many of them are. And I don't know why, especially with like what those deals seem to be done enough time, right? Like, why not? Why not dip back into that world?
I would be okay if they came back in this capacity in those characters, but similar to maybe what they're going to do with Spider-Man, I think they need to write them differently. I think the characters that they exist within the Netflix shows don't exist within the Marvel universe as we know it. So I would love to see them introduced, but I also love to see them introduced in a way that leans more into certain aspects of their comic book selves. Certainly for Daredevil, I love his grumpy anger and I want to keep that, but, you know, give him more of the actual red costume, you know, that doesn't look so weird, I suppose. Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin, I think his presence and personality is there, but like obviously the over-violence can't exist, and I'm okay with that in this capacity, you know, for it to be changed slightly. I think those actors all did so great in those roles, but I think it needs to be recontextualized and done into the Marvel universe that fits the real Marvel universe that we know.
Yeah.
Obviously, Jeff Loeb had his vision of what he wanted to do with those
Didn't
TV
go great.
Shows, and well, yeah. And let's the Defenders, and Defenders is reason enough where I'm just like, reboot all of it, you know?
Kevin, that is the stuff that that brought you and I together in
circle.
Podcasting form, right? Like, the very first thing, Everything is Super is a relatively new podcast on post-show recaps, right? Like, beginning in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
But you've been on the post-show recaps network since the first season of Daredevil.
Yep.
And what's that? Let's do a quick look at when did they do the Daredevil Netflix show?
It's 2015.
Daredevil Netflix came out in 2015.
Yeah.
You've been podcasting on Post Show Recap since basically the very beginning. And we were in this very room when we recorded our very first podcast.
That's very
together,
true.
About Daredevil. And you were moving to Los Angeles, what, like the next day?
The next day.
The very next day? Yeah. What did we do? We did a preview of like Daredevil on Netflix. We were going to do it episodically, and we ended up
doing that for that season.
That first episode, I believe, we wanted to acknowledge the Ben Affleck Daredevil movie.
So we watched it.
So we like stopped mid podcast, watched the movie, and then came back to the podcast. To bring it full circle, do you want to stop the podcast down right now and quickly watch the Ben Affleck Daredevil movie and then come back in?
I do not.
Well, whether you want to or not, I think that's exactly what we're going to do. So everybody just like give us like a quick like for you, it's just going to be like maybe 5 seconds. For us, it's going to be about 2 hours, and we'll be back with our report on the Ben Affleck Daredevil movie. Yeah, it still sucks. Wow.
It's not good.
It's not
good.
It's still not good.
It's very bad.
Yeah.
Jon Favreau, though, that's the part that will stick with
him,
me forever.
Yeah, for sure.
Because Jon Favreau existing in those movies and also playing
still
Happy
pretty
Hogan.
Good. She's not asking it right now, but I know Tessa, in addition to the question that she did ask, has like said repeatedly, like all she wants is for us to do season 3 of Daredevil. I don't know. Like things are just like superhero content is never not going to be so busy that we can like, well, we'll have 13 weeks to do an episodic Daredevil podcast. I just don't know how we do that. I would totally be down to like rewatch it.
I say, have you seen the third season,
yeah.
Josh? Okay, it's the third season of Daredevil is good.
I loved the third.
I loved it better than the second. That's for sure.
Yeah, but like I even liked a good chunk of the second season of Daredevil. I think top to bottom, from first episode to last episode, Daredevil is the best Netflix Marvel show. And like, and a lot of people were really bummed that it ended, but I actually thought that season 3 of Daredevil like felt like it had a quality about it that was like a conclusion, that it felt like it ended that story. That like if that had been it, which so far it has been, that I would always be thrilled to see more of those characters and more of that world. But if that was going to be the last we would ever see of them, I feel like it's a legit story. Like I think it tells a legit ending. I think like the avocados at law, like, you know, like we land in a place with them that if not feels like fully full circle, I think it feels like a landing point to a certain degree. So I guess this is like our mini Daredevil season 3 podcast. I really liked it. They of course do like the
he's
grit.
Not Bullseye, but yeah. He will be Bullseye at the end. Yeah, that's,
you know, like they of course have to do that, but I thought it was a cool interpretation of Bullseye, even though I wouldn't have like rooted necessarily for like we need to do the Bullseye origin story.
Kingpin's involvement was really great throughout there. Everything with Karen Page I thought was solid. It really was, I think, from top to bottom, like a very, very solid season. It does feel like it felt like an ending, right? Like more so than I think the others got.
Yeah.
In a way, I hate to say it, but like it did feel like Iron Fist had an ending, at least. It opened the door for a lot of potential, but it also was just like, this is where we could end it. I think Luke Cage and Jessica
Iron
Jones
Fist had
it,
definitely had an ending. I think it was the end of the first episode of the show. Was
just, that's it. Let's call the wrap here.
I think that's where it stopped. All right, I think we're going to start wrapping it up here. Kevin, next week we're going to find out, I think, whoever is like this Ultron-ish figure on What If. In addition to that, and I know you're not pumped about this, but I think we ought to do it because in two Fridays, second Friday of October, October 9th, I think, or is it October 8th rather? It's that weekend. Venom. Let there be carnage. There shall be carnage.
Boy, oh boy.
The Venom sequel is coming out. And we kicked this can down the road. I think we should be kicking ourselves a little bit. About a year ago, we did our Spider-Man coverage. We did all the Spider-Man movies. And we like consciously chose not to do Venom as part of that series. Perhaps this was an error. Maybe this was a mistake. Because now we have to talk about it. So next week, I think we're gonna watch the first Venom movie. We'll come back here with some takes. If anyone has takes on Venom, the movie, send them in. Super at postshowrecaps.com. Kevin and I will spend the second half of the show talking about Venom, maybe talking about what we're expecting for Venom 2, and then the following week, we will talk about Venom 2 alongside the What If finale. Lots of rumors flying fast and furious, Kevin. Stay off the internet.
About Venom?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Scary.
I'm certainly not in the Venom talk or whatever you want to call it. Like, I'm not on that part of the internet, so...
You're not on the Venom web?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Venom web is a scary place.
God.
Lots going down on the Venom web.
Just riots and Venoms and carnage.
Yeah. Deep internet stuff is what's happening on the Venom web. So we're going there. You're so excited.
I'm thrilled. I'm more excited for the second one because Woody Harrelson's there, but... And if you listen to YA, you know my love of Woody Harrelson is high. So
tell us about YA.
Well, the what is that? YA is the young adult podcast that we host here as part of Post Show Recaps, specifically for the patrons of Post Show Recaps. If you sign up at the $5 level, you can get access to this along with many other podcasts that we host. But me and Melissa Woodward talk every week about a young adult franchise. We started with Twilight. And then we have gone into the Hunger Games, and we've got some really exciting stuff coming up for what we're going to do as we wrap up the Hunger Games here. We have our wrap-up show, and then as we head into October, we have some interesting plans that we'll be announcing very soon that I could probably openly talk about once we talk next week about what we're doing. But it's really fun, and it's going to be, I think, a perfect time to sign up, honestly, for the post-show recaps patron. As we head into October, and check out YA, because we got some really good stuff I think you people are going to be into.
Yeah, some very thematic October content. Of course, October is the one-year anniversary of the Post Show Recaps Patreon program. We are so excited about it. It's crazy that a year has flown by. It's been such a fun time in with all of the patrons of PSR, in the podcast feed, in the Discord. We've just been having a blast. If you've ever considered it, October 1 is going to be an incredible day to sign up. We're not saying, like, sign up now. It's end of the month. You get charged when you sign up, and then you get charged at the start of the month. You don't want to get double tapped. I totally get it. So if you don't want to sign up right now, don't do it. October 1st rolls around. I think there's going to be some good incentives for you to sign up and be part of that one-year anniversary party. You're not going to regret it. You're going to be thrilled to have been along for the ride. You're going to get Kevin and Melissa talking about all sorts of ridiculous stuff on the YA podcast, plus other podcasts that we're doing there for the patrons only. Also, it's just great. You know, support the podcasters, support the art you love. You want people to make the stuff that you like. You want them to keep doing it. You know, you say, like, hey, I support you. I like what you're doing. We want to get more Josh and Kevin in the same room again doing podcasts together. Like, this is the way, as they say.
That might have been a downsell. People would be like, listen to this Kevin.
Listen to these guys. I don't know. So just back pocket it. We're going to be very annoying about it next month. We're always annoying about it.
Ahead of time.
My God, we're going to be really, really annoying about it next month. So just a warning. I did say this is the way. Brendan Fitzpatrick asked us, did we check out Star Wars Visions? Kevin and I watched the first episode of this is a Star Wars anime that's on Disney Plus right now. They dropped the whole first season, and we watched the first one. It was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
It was really
very
interesting.
Different,
and
very
cool.
Great style. They're each individual episodes. They're each, I think, made by a different animation studio in Japan.
Yes.
And it's really fascinating, really interesting. That first one especially was very, like, classic samurai films and everything like that. It was really, really well done. It had a really cool, strange lightsaber.
Oh, it was
device.
Awesome. It was really dope. It was really, really fun. I really enjoyed watching it. So I don't think we'll podcast about it. Star Wars coverage on hold until we have Book of Boba Fett, and then we will do some ramp up to that. So we'll see. That's allegedly December, but, you know, taking it easy, trying to figure it out. It's going to be a jam-packed fall no matter what. So Book of Boba Fett or not, we're going to have a lot going on the podcast. Kevin is at Kev Mahadeo. He's more than that, but he's also that.
Yes.
That's how you find him on Twitter, at Kev.
Give me a follow. Tell everyone to follow me.
tell everyone to follow me? Tell everyone to follow me. Does that work?
No.
I'm going to tell everybody patronize me.
That's a good one.
Did it work? Did everyone sign up?
I hope so.
I hope so, too. At Kev Mahadeo, he tweets out the stuff. Matt Round Howard, I sometimes tweet out the stuff. So much happening on Post Show Recaps. You'll check it all out. You'll have the best time. You'll be so glad that you did it. Kevin, anything else other than just like basking in the glory of just being able to like
you know, wave see at each other face. In
yeah,
the room.
Like, hey, I'm looking across at you right now from this microphone. It's very exciting.
A lovely thing.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing.
What a great time this has been. I wish they were all like this.
It would be nice if all of this was just
maybe
how we
someday.
Existed.
Maybe someday we'll maybe just, one day. We'll be able to do this. Every day would be every day.
Every day.
Yeah. Yeah, I would like it to be every day. I think
just
it'd be
a
great.
Daily podcast.
Yeah.
Is each one also going to be like an hour and a half?
No. They'll probably be shorter, but not by a ton.
Not by a lot.
Like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a lot of content. Look, I made you some content. All right. Well, we made you some content. We hope you enjoyed this week's Everything is Super. Next week, What If? Episode 8 and some Venom stuff. Till then, Kevin, I don't want to say bye, but I know, I have
I don't
to do
either.
It. Bye, everybody.
Bye.